What is up, my fellow side hustlers? This is your friend and host, Ryan Helms. I want to welcome you to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. I'm part of a small minority that are taking action because we just aren't satisfied with waking up, going to a 9-to-5 job, then coming home only to repeat it again the next day and never make any real progress in life. We're here to create our own path, our own happiness, our own freedom. Busy lives with limited resources mean we can't just throw stuff against the wall and hope that something sticks. We have to play smart and use only today's best strategies and most efficient tools. We aren't going to sit back and hope for a 3% raise each year. We are building additional income sources that will allow us to create the life we want. We call ourselves Freedom Chasers. And this podcast highlights the journeys of these everyday people who are creating extraordinary side hustles. Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. If you are enjoying these episodes, listen until the end or check out the show notes to hear four ways in which you can support this podcast to keep it ad-free. In this episode, I'm chatting with Chris Parker about how after 10 plus years of it being just a side hustle, he finally took his business full time. We'll dive into how his business has evolved, how he monetizes this very niche website, and what the transition to full-time entrepreneurship has been like for him. So let's not waste any more time and jump into this episode with Chris now.
Hi, my name is Chris Parker. I'm the founder of whatismyipaddress.com. I started the site back in 2000, which might be longer ago than some of your audience, but it's been a quite a ride. It was very interesting because it was never intended to be a business, and it went from a hobby to a side hustle to my full-time occupation now. I had tried a number of other businesses, online businesses first, which lasted for a little while and then went down in flames. During that time, I kept working in the corporate world. And about 2014, my employer, hit with the economic crisis like so many others, had to let me go. You know, hey, Chris, we can't afford to keep paying you. And I was faced with that decision of, okay, do I look for a new corporate job or do I give my hustle a good test run here? And so my wife and I talked about it. We thought about it and set up some milestones and, okay, we're going to try this for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and a year. We had these milestones set out to recoup my full daytime income with growth in my business within 1 year. And if I could do that, then we both felt good about me continuing to do it. Plus, I had no idea if it would even be like reasonable for me to work from home. Mm-hmm. You kind of never know what that's going to be like until you've spent a month sitting in your house, not having that. You know, I've been in the corporate world for 20 plus years, so all of a sudden going from working in an office of 50 or 100 people to being me and my dog, that can be a pretty big transition. So that's kind of my backstory.
Awesome. So you did your, if I did the very basic math right, so hopefully I did, you did your side hustle for 14 years?
Yes, I've side hustled in one way or another for about 14 years. Well, probably technically longer than that, but yeah, for 14 years.
But this site, whatismyipaddress.com, that site was running for at least 14 years before you went all in on that.
Wow. Yep, in 2014, I went full in on it.
Cool. So like, what was your background, pre-year 2000? Like, what were you doing something? Did you have a history and something that led you into starting like this specific site?
Well, that was 2000. The internet was pretty young. There weren't a whole lot of sites out there. At the time, I was working for, I would say, an online e-commerce company, but when I started working for them, there was no online e-commerce. It was a mail order company where you called in to place your orders, a company called Club Mac, selling Macintosh computer hardware. And once the internet came around, I helped them set up a site. You know, that at that point in time, there were no website degrees. There were no webmaster degrees. this whole HTML thing was pretty new. And so I kind of plodded and poked along helping them do that. And at some point we were having some weird issue and we needed to know what the public IP address of our office was. And so I went on to Alta Vista. You know, Google didn't exist then or wasn't particularly big at that time. And that really wasn't an easy way to find out what the public IP address of the office was. And so I can make a website that'll do that. And so I put together an old Windows NT server box, stuck it on my DSL connection at home. And when you went to whatismyipaddress.com, it would just show you your IP address. No content, nothing. And I thought, this is useful for me and whoever happens to run across it will use it.
Yeah. So
that's how it started.
What exactly is an IP address?
So the easiest way to explain what an IP address is, there's two great analogies. It's like your phone number, but on the internet. You know, if you want to call someone, you've got your caller ID, or you can look at it as like the return address on a letter that you're sending. If you send a letter to someone and you want a response, you have to put your return address on there. So the address that you send it to is the IP address of the web server where the website is running. The return address is your home computer or your cell phone. And, you know, it gets delivered across the internet, hopping along, and the website sees it, reads it, says, they want the home page. Let me put it in the envelope and send it back. And it comes back to that return address. So return address, it's kind of your temporary or semi-permanent location on the internet.
Yeah. Does your IP address, does it change depending on where you're at? So if like I'm at home and then I go to Starbucks, does it change?
When you change your internet connection, when you go from your Wi-Fi at home to the Wi-Fi at the, at Starbucks, it will be your home IP address and then your Starbucks IP address.
Gotcha.
So everybody who's sitting at Starbucks will have that same IP address.
Gotcha.
Just like when you're sitting at home, everyone who's using your home internet has the same IP address.
That's awesome. So is this, is the IP address, is that how they, people get in trouble with like pirating music and stuff? Is that how they figure out who you are?
That's exactly how it works, because anytime you do these peer-to-peer, you know, the file sharing, your device, your computer is communicating with somebody else's computer. And if they see you hosting copyrighted content, they file a subpoena against your ISP, send a letter along in the mail to you saying, give us $3,000 or we're taking you to court.
So in 2000, you built this framework for a site that essentially all it did was spit out a few little numbers, which is your IP address on the screen. What made you evolve that into something more? Like, can you take us through it was 14 years in the making to you kind of going all in on it. So can you take us through kind of the evolution of it being from just a couple numbers on the screen to, you know, something that's actually producing income?
Absolutely. Kind of the first step was, you know, I'm a geek. You know, I enjoy the internet stuff. I enjoy the technology. No reason to apologize for that. That's good stuff. And so I just decided to put an email address on there. So if anyone has any questions, email me, you know. And so I started getting, you know, maybe one question every couple of days, and it became a couple of questions a day. And at some point it was like, I don't want to spend my nights and weekends responding to people's emails. Let me just take the top 10 of these questions, because I'm, you know, responding to the same thing quite frequently, and create frequently asked questions. And so that was kind of the first iteration, was let me build a couple more pages that give people some information that answer those common questions. A number of years later, Google
Ads. I think that's a good point to like, pause on, because, you know, you were listening to what the people were asking, right? And I think this, a lot of people need to do this when they're building their website, when they're building a product. Like, you shouldn't just build what you think is great in your head. You should listen to what people are asking for and then build that. I mean, you hear a lot of startups and things like that fail and go under even after they've got funding. It's because they build a lot of features and waste money and time doing things that people don't really want. So like, you in the beginning letting people's feedback drive you to actually turning this into something, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I wish I would have been like incredible business insight, but it was just happenstance in some sense. Yeah. Of like, oh, this was just the natural progression of something that was a hobby for me, and let me just add more information and make it more useful over time. And that's kind of been kind of the underlying theme of what I've done with it over the years, is let me just provide something that's useful, and, you know, the advertisers will, people will visit it, the advertisers will pay me a little bit of money to have an ad on there, and that might actually grow into something.
Yeah. So is this, at what point during this evolution of the site did you decide to monetize it? And maybe before we get there, like, when did you have like the epiphany that you could somehow possibly make money with this thing that was giving people an IP address that had some frequently asked questions on it? Like how did you just start researching, like, you know, the online, how to make money online stuff? Or like, how did you get to the point where you're like, hey, this people might do somehow, I might be able to get money from this thing?
I think the first thing that caught my attention was the computer I had it running on started alerting me saying the hard drive was almost full. And I was like, it's like a 6-page website. How could the hard drive be full? And it was the logs of so many people visiting it a day that actually, you know, that had built up for a number of years that was like, hey, we're almost out of drive space. That's the point where I realized, oh, there's a lot of people coming here. And they started looking around and, well, you know, people are running advertising on other sites. Is this something I can do? And kind of at the beginning, there weren't a whole lot of options for ads. You could do like banner networks and things like, you know, banner exchanges and little banner networks. But I think the major turning point was when Google launched AdSense, that I could, you know, put a you know, single line of code. I didn't have to maintain a relationship. I just had to do something very simple, and they handled everything from there. And that was kind of the epiphany of like, oh, I could actually make money from this. In the beginning, it was, you know, probably not even enough to cover the cost of my DSL connection. But it was like, hey, well, if someone wants to pay me for my hobby, I'll take it. This could be fun.
So you put this little line of code on there. You started running like these various ads. So miscellaneous companies could just pop up depending on kind of the content that they were pushing out. And is that the sole method for monetizing the site now?
It's actually becoming less and less of the monetization of the site. I've worked to build a lot of content up around affiliate programs that tie in with that niche. As my writing skills get better and as I work with contractors with better writing skills, we've really been able to grow the monetization that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, knowing that you're in kind of like your address is based on like giving people's IP address, people may think like, oh, like what affiliate products could you offer there, including me? I'm kind of curious. So what type of affiliate products like fit into this niche? I'm curious.
Well, I've worked to kind of expand into the privacy and security space. Your IP address will usually, if you visit my website, you'll see that it's probably coming back with the location pretty near where you live. In some cases, it can be, I was joking with one of the guys that was working for him. He's like, it's pointing right to my kitchen window. I'm a little concerned about that. And other people, this could be, you know, states away. But in the most case, it's usually the right city. So the IP address could give an idea of, you know, give websites and people that you're communicating with a general idea of where you are. And that, once people kind of see that, it kind of freaks them out. So I started building a lot of content up around privacy and security. And what's probably taken off best is VPN services or virtual private networks. You route your internet traffic through their servers. So when you're visiting family in India, it could still look like you're in Southern California or New York or wherever kind of you want to appear based on where that company has servers. And that protects your identity. A lot of these companies are run out of countries that are not as accommodating to subpoenas and freedom of and like requests for information. Right. So if they're incorporated in Panama, you know, you send them a subpoena. Who was using this IP address at this time? And they go, we're not going to tell you. And so, yes, it's kind of that blend between, okay, there's privacy, but there can also be used for like illegality and stuff like that. But I'm not by any means promoting illegal activity, but you know, we have a right to kind of keep our data private and not be spied on by ISPs and governments and things like that.
Is there anything that we should be concerned about, like about our IP addresses? Is there anything like besides like the surface level, like, okay, you're in this approximate area, like can people do other things with that IP address?
They can knock you offline with denial of service attacks. So they compromise a bunch of computers around the world and push tons of data down your internet connection. And even if you've got a fiber internet connection, it could clog it up and slow it down, making your internet service unusable. I think for most people, it really is that, oh gosh, it pinpoints me to a city. If I live in a small city, there might only be one Chris Parker in that small city that someone can look up on the in the phone book or something like that and pull out their address or oh yeah, I know who that is. Yeah, he lives over there. So for a lot of people, it's really about either the combination of whether websites know where I am, people I'm communicating with know where I am, or, you know, the government knows where I am.
Yeah. So you're going back to like the monetization of the site and stuff. So you're offering, partnering with these other companies, such as these VPN sites and things like that. And are these typically, is this like a like cost per click or cost per acquisition? Like how do you get paid from these companies?
Depending on which one it is, it's usually, it's frequently a CPA. Affiliates tend to like cost per acquisition because they get their commission front loaded and it's easier to manage your finances when you get your all your commission lump sum up front. Some of them run with a rev share. So as long as that person is a customer, you get a percentage of the business for the life of that customer. Personally, I'm kind of a fan of the ongoing, you know, rev share for the life of the customer. I kind of feel that it's a win-win for everybody. If it's, you know, it's in my interest to make sure that person stays as a customer with that advertiser for as long as they can. So it would generally tend to build, in my opinion, a better relationship between me as the affiliate and the company, because our interests are aligned, keeping that person a customer as long as possible. Sure. On the CPA stuff, you tend to attract affiliates that are kind of, I don't want to say pump and dump, but can, hey, we just want to get the money. And then we don't have a vested interest. And if you're cash flow tight, yeah, getting your commission up front is a really nice thing.
Yeah. So when you're on like a rev share program, so you get a certain percentage each month, like what type of percentages do you see out there? Like for someone that's kind of new to the affiliate space, like what's typical to expect? Like, you know, 10% of whatever the monthly fee is. I know it varies, but in your space, what are you seeing?
I think in my space, I'm trying to think of the ballpark numbers without disclosing any particular partners or any specific numbers. It can, if you're in like a service industry, whether it's software or an ongoing subscription to something, it's often in that 30% range.
Yeah.
When it becomes hardware or physical goods, sometimes you're lucky if you can get 10%. I know you start getting into electronics, it could be 2% and things like that. So it could be really tight, but it can also be, I've seen some programs for informational sources being 50, 60, 75%.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be very lucrative if you've got the right audience and the right offer and it makes a good match.
Yeah. So you've got several affiliate relationships set up. You're moving ahead with this business, and then we get to 2014 and you're laid off. When that happened and you kind of sat down with your wife and had that conversation, did you change anything in the business like right away? Like, okay, like I've got the time now, I've been wanting to do this. Or did you like totally revamp your business plan? Like what was going through your head and what actions did you take?
For me, the big push of when it became a full-time gig was I need to produce significantly more content. I need to build new tools. I've got the time now to do this kind of stuff. And so that's what I did. I got a hold of a couple of writers and have a couple of contract writers. I think kind of one of the things that I regret is maybe not the right word, but in hindsight, I look at is that because I was never really up until maybe 5-8 years ago, I was never really looking at it as a business model. There were a lot of things that I built as part of the process where, well, when it was just me, I was doing everything anyway. So why should I make things automated? Why should I make things easy for other people to do? I'm now reaping the negative benefits of having custom coded a lot of stuff and custom built a lot of things that in a lot of ways, I'm the bottleneck for growing my business now. And so I can't just magically, hey, let me start up 20 contractors and have them all start churning away. And it means no more work for me. Well, if I bring on 20 writers, it means 20 times the work for me now. Mm-hmm. So I'm in the process of trying to figure out how to undo and redo a lot of the infrastructure that I've built up over the last 20 years and make it more usable or more accessible to other people.
So when they're creating content, they have to pass everything off to you. So based on how you have to input it in your back end?
Yes. Every page, every content page on the website is custom coded. There are some good reasons for it at the time. The site gets a ton of traffic, and above and beyond the human traffic that it gets, a lot of scrapers, a lot of compromised machines trying to find out what is my own IP address for command and control purposes, malware and stuff like that, try to use my website to determine which machines have been infected and stuff like that. And so for however much legitimate traffic actually hits my, is served, there's probably 10 to 50 times the number of queries coming in that I'm actually, that are not real.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting, because I had a guy on the podcast. This was probably, I think it was like maybe episode 55, 60, somewhere around there. And he owns, I didn't know anything about this. I was like totally oblivious to it. But he owns a startup called AdBank. And mm-hmm. they are a, have you ever heard of it?
It sounds familiar, so I'll let you continue and see.
They're a crypto technology ad tech company. So they're using crypto technology to basically, one of the things they're doing, and how he was explaining it to me, most of it, to be honest, was way over my head. but they have so, like he was describing, like there's so much traffic on the internet that's fake traffic. And people are running like all these bots to these websites just to click ads and things like that. And yep. people are, he said that he was telling me that there's a, I believe it was like, there's a cartel in Mexico that this is how they fund their operations, is they've got these bots that go out on the internet and they're clicking all these ads and things like this and generating revenue on, it's like their sites, and they've got bots running to their sites that they're advertising on, and it's generating. And I was like, holy crap, I would have never thought about that. But he was saying like this crazy number of stuff is like fake traffic. So that was like totally new world for me. And that you're saying it was, what'd you say, like 50 to 100 times? What you said?
It's probably somewhere in 50. If you're looking at the math, it's probably, was that 90, 95% of the traffic that hits the edge is not legitimate traffic. It's not a human being.
And I'm not
talking, you know, Google and Bing and things like that intentionally, you know, indexing, but I'm talking just pure legitimate people that are, hey, I want to reverse engineer his database, so I'm going to query every single IP address starting right now.
Wow.
It just, you know, you get a few hundred people doing stuff like that, or 100,000 infected machines, even if they're only requesting their IP address once a day, it can be a crazy amount of traffic. And so there's been a lot of cat and mouse and jumping through hoops and a lot of infrastructure costs that probably most website operators would have to deal with, that I have to deal with just because of the high profile nature of my site.
Huh. That's so, someone listening to this now that has a site that's maybe getting 500 views a day or something like that. Is that, you, would something like that be mostly real views, you think, or would that be 95% fake as well?
I think the numbers that I've seen in the last couple of years, that if you don't have some content, you know, if you don't have a, like someone like Cloudflare or Akamai in front of you, probably about half the traffic that you get to your servers, if not like 75% of it, isn't real human beings. Hmm. When you look at your Google Analytics logs, those things should be pretty good. Google's pretty good at filtering that stuff out. If anything, those are probably just a little bit on the low side, but Google Analytics will probably give you a decent idea of what reality is.
Yeah. It, you know, going back to that other conversation I had with that guy, it was really eye-opening, because you've got all these companies that are wasting, I forgot how many like $1 billion he said every year are wasted in this fake traffic clicking ads. So all these bots are clicking these ads and the companies are like paying out for those clicks, and it's all just fake stuff. So that's it's crazy. Again, just totally world that I was not even aware of was happening. So
I think in November 2018, like Google worked with the FBI and a bunch of ad networks to shut down one of those cartels. And it was in the millions of clicks a day or something like that. Yeah. And it was just a crazy amount of fraud going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So going back to my original question, I got sidetracked. And I actually think I interrupted you, but you said that you now had the time, and some of the challenges was on content, meaning somebody writes something, you have to then put it in the back end because it's custom coded. Did you also start building new things for the site? Have you built anything kind of new recently for the platform?
Yeah, one of the, I'll take a step back on it. In the last year, I hired a business coach, and really trying to learn things that aren't in my wheelhouse and just really have an open mind to what are the opportunities out there? What are the methodologies? What kind of things can I do to be personally just more productive with my time and more effective at what I do? And at one of the conferences that I went to in 2018, I saw a presentation by Ryan Levesque called the Ask Method. And it's, and it was really just a great technique for better understanding your customers and being able to use their language when you're communicating with them. And thus your conversion rates go up. You're really speaking to exactly what people's issues are. And so I kind of had the, in a weird way, the opposite problem that a lot of people have is I have a ton of traffic coming to the site and I don't know, in some sense, I don't know why they're coming. Yeah, they're coming to get their IP address, but what's the, you know, what's the underlying reason of why they're
coming? Why do they want their IP address?
Why do they want their IP address at the rate of, you know, 200,000 people a day? It's it baffles me at times. And so over the course of a couple of months, we ran a bunch of surveys framed around Ryan's techniques and kind of segmented, okay, we see that we've got like three or four different types of people coming to the website for different reasons. Which one of those stands to be the most monetizable to look at? And so we
How did you execute this survey?
We actually just used SurveyMonkey in a pop-up. Okay. One of the benefits is if you get ridiculous amounts of traffic is even if I get, you know, 1%, you know, 0.1%, let's say if I get 1% of the people every day choose to fill out a survey, I can get a couple thousand responses over the course of a weekend. And so we would just trickle the survey out to, you know, a small percentage of the traffic over a week or two. And okay, can we have this information? Now let's reformulate the questions based on the answers and re-ask them again. And then we started looking at people who are using VPNs. What were the reasons why they were using them? And we found out, so we kind of asked that open-ended question using Ryan's technique. And then you go back and using your research, you go back and ask it, say, okay, if you could choose from one of these three things, which one would it be? Are you using a VPN because you are concerned about privacy? Are you using a VPN because you're concerned about security? Or are you using a VPN because you want to access content that you can't access from where you're currently at? And then I think the fourth one is you always add, honestly, none of the above, and give them an answer, give them an opportunity to fill in the blank. And so we ran that survey and confirmed that, yeah, those were the three primary reasons why people were using VPNs. So we built up a process for people to figure out, well, what VPN is best for you based on what you actually want to do with a VPN. If you're just concerned about the security of your information, your banking, things like that while you're traveling, you don't care. I personally don't care if the government sees what websites I go to. I'm more concerned with data being intercepted midstream and things like that. So, or if I'm traveling internationally, I don't really trust the free hotel Wi-Fi. I don't trust the mom and pop cafe to be able to lock down their internet like a professional. Mm-hmm. So use a VPN for security. And so we built up this this process. We called it a VPN simplifier that used the common language that people were talking about. Oh, I want to stream this. I'm worried about being spied on. I want to be unblocked. And you look at all of that verbiage that they use and you repeat it back to them in the sales process. And so we just launched that about a week ago and are seeing conversion rates somewhere in the neighborhood of 50% better than when we weren't doing that.
How are you offering this on the site?
So we originally had a page called a VPN comparison, which was just a really nasty spreadsheet, basically, of here's kind of the top 10 or 15 VPNs. Here's a couple of their bells and whistles. And, you know, the one at the top of the list gets more business than the one at the bottom of the list, unless somebody knows something. And, you know, in the surveys, you read between the lines and a lot of people are like, well, I don't know how to choose which one. Do I just choose the one that's at the top of the list? Mm-hmm. Or is there a reason why I might want the one in the middle of the list? It's, you know, a lot of these VPN comparison sites don't really, that are out there, don't give you that information. It's just, here's a list. You get to choose if you get to choose on your own. And okay, well, I hope it's this one. And so we did the research and put together a page and just very simple prompts on the page of, I want access, I want security, I want privacy. And then rather than giving them 10 options, here's the best three that through our research are actually able to offer you kind of best in class for that particular service that you're looking for.
Nice. And then on the one that gets presented to them, there's an affiliate link in that. And if they chose to purchase that VPN, then that's how you make money through that transaction.
Yep. Whether it's a cost per acquisition or a rev share, we make a little bit of money off of it and allows to, hopefully it'll allow us to actually scale up some advertising towards that page and actually make some margin on it.
So how, going back to the ask method from Ryan Levesque, you know, I remember this was right when I started like my side hustle journey, like 18 months ago or so. Like I remember going to his website and watching like one of his webinars and downloading like his content. It was so in depth. Like there was, yes. I just remember like this, like flow, not a flow chart, but like a tree map of like this huge tree map of all this stuff. And I was just like, whoa, okay, I'm definitely not there yet. So like, how did you consume that information and figure out how to apply it to your business, knowing just for someone that doesn't know about it, it's basically, it's called the ask method because you're supposed to, you know, talk with your customers more to figure out what exactly they need and then implement it, very much simplifying it. So, and it's a ton of content. So how did you take all that content and make heads or tails of it?
It was actually, I would say, almost an overwhelming process. We probably watched, I sat down with one of my writers and we probably watched about 40 hours of content. And we didn't really, there are some of his content that's very specific to certain processes. And because we weren't really, most of his, it's, I'm trying to think of the way to phrase this. We're not his ideal client in that sense. Usually it's a more high ticket e-commerce type of product or masterclass or web or trainings and things like that, where I think there's a little more opportunity to dig in and apply the method. But we just kind of went through it and figured out, okay, well, that applies to us. That's the language that we're going to use. Well, that doesn't apply to us. And we just kind of, one of the things he talks about all the time was you don't have to get it perfect. You just have to get it going. And so we just said, okay, we just need to implement this the best that we can, as quickly as we can, and just keep moving the ball down the road and not get too tied up in some of the intricacies of it and some of the analytics. You know, we had enough data that we could avoid some of the methodologies that he has.
Yeah, cool. And if anybody's interested in what we're talking about here, the ask method, I'll link down below for his book that he put out on the topic, or you could just Google the ask method and you'll see a lot of content on it. Be prepared to be inundated with content if you choose to download his ebooks or anything like that. Yes. But I mean, super good. Just like you said, it's you kind of need to be at a certain state in your business almost for it to really be valuable to you.
Yeah, I think if you have a team, I think it could be really productive. If you're just an individual, it might be, if you've got the time to do it, I think it's worthwhile, but it can be a fairly labor-intensive process.
Yeah. So, you know, we're talking right now. So this episode will probably come out beginning of March. We're actually recording it a few days before Christmas time. Knowing that it's December that we're talking right now, if we were talking again December 2019, where do you think the business would be? What would have changed in the 12 months, and how do you think you'd be positioned?
Hopefully will no longer be the bottleneck to my business. That's really probably the major goal that I have for the year, is to allow other people to be able to execute on their skill set, where I'm not lost in the weeds on the business, but that I can provide a general direction for people and say, hey, let's go here, let's go this way. You know, it's been fun that it's gotten from side hustle to solopreneur. But I think I'm now moving into the stage where I have a variety of contractors working for me, and I'm trying to get systems in place and processes in place. And when you haven't documented that as part of your business growth of the stage, it's a little overwhelming at the one point to say, okay, I need to document all my processes right now. Yeah. So that would be my advice to anyone else, is start documenting your processes early when they're fairly simple and they're easy enough that,
yep,
you know, it's not too big of a deal to do it all at once. But
yeah, what
if
we
I
do
could get out of the day to day, that would be awesome.
What we do on the process side, and for anyone listening or even for you, Chris, one of the things that we find really useful is we use a tool called Loom, L-O-O-M, to mm-hmm. do quick screen recordings. They have like a Chrome extension, super useful. schedule, and we'll just record whatever it is that we're doing, and almost use that as like a work instruction. Have like a one pager, so it'll be a quick overview, really high level of the process, and then it's like, hey, the step by step, play by play is in this video. Click here. So that's how we've really mapped out a lot of our processes. The one caveat to that is that you need to make sure that's actually your process and that it's kind of firmed up, or else you're going to be recording a ton of videos. But once you get things that are almost steady state, we find that to be a good process for us. And then that way we can send it off to our VAs or whoever's helping us with that process. And then they can quickly watch that video, and you can get a little bit more detail without having like an 18 page document. So
yeah, I've done that with a couple of fairly streamlined processes where I've sat down with a VA and on a Zoom call, we walk through it. And it's so nice to have some of those things that took me an hour a day or 2 hours a day now being handled by someone in the Philippines for a couple bucks an hour, which is like, right. I'm like, why did I not do this sooner? Yeah. I should have done this years ago. Would have made my life a lot easier.
Exactly. Well, Chris, I really appreciate you coming around and hanging on the Hustle to Freedom podcast and talking to all of us about how you've taken this website that started out with just spitting out a few numbers on a webpage in 2000 to, you know, taking it to your full-time gig now in 2018. It's been really cool to hear about the evolution of your business. Let's wrap up by telling people where they can find out more about your stuff. I know we've mentioned it a couple times, but just let us know that and any other places that they can find you.
Sure. You can always get a hold of the website at whatismyipaddress.com. There's all sorts of tools and widgets and information there. And you can scare yourself by going there and seeing if we can figure out how close we are on your IP address. And if anyone wants to kind of follow some of the behind the scenes stuff, you can follow me on my own website at cgparker.com, and I'll send the link so you can drop in the show notes.
Sure. Awesome. I was just about to type it, but if you do that, I'll make sure I'll get it right then. Cool, Chris. Well, I sincerely appreciate it. I had a blast, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you very much. Had a great time.
And that's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Remember, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes below. And if you like this podcast and want me to keep bringing you great episodes each week, here are a few ways you can support the Hustle to Freedom podcast. First, take a screenshot of the podcast and send it to a friend who may like it. Second, I'm doing a drawing for a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal for every 5 iTunes reviews I receive. So if you want a chance to win, leave a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts and send me an email at hello@gritandhustle.co. Detailed instructions on how to do this are in the show notes below. Third, take your side hustle to the next level by implementing a sales funnel to turn your passive website visitors into paying customers with ClickFunnels, the number one sales funnel software in the world. You can get a free trial by going to gritandhustle.co/profit. And fourth, if you're interested in podcasting also, which is the fastest growing content medium in the world, head over to gritandhustle.co/podcastingmadeeasy to enroll in my course now. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.